Giannis Antetokounmpo wants an NBA championship and a heist movie and a cooking show. We're talking to the CEO of his new production company. Plus, there's unrest in the MLB Players Association, and Shohei Ohtani now has his own logo. It's Wednesday, March 20th. I'm Owen Poindexter, and this is Front Office Sports Today. There's turmoil in the MLB Players Association. Joining me now to discuss is Front Office Sports newsletter writer Eric Fisher. Welcome, Eric.
Hello.
So we got reports yesterday from The Athletic and ESPN that MLBPA representatives are pushing the head of the union, Tony Clark, to oust Deputy Director Bruce Meyer. What's going on here?
Well, there's a number of things going on. There's a lot of unrest within the union, but it seems to run along multiple lines here that writ large, they're is some unrest because spending on players overall is down by about $1 billion from a year ago. And the total that we have now, about $2.9 billion, is concentrated pretty heavily on two players, Shohei Ohtani and Yamamoto with the Dodgers. And so you have a lot of unease about that whole situation and what local television revenues are doing to overall player spending. And, you know, when you have an economic environment like that, people start pointing fingers. And within that finger pointing, you have some players feeling like maybe the current union leadership, particularly Bruce Meyer, is too ideologically aligned with Scott Boras, who has really made his primary stock and trade on top-tier players. He represents players at all career stages, but he's got a heavy concentration of top-tier players, big dollars, big market deals. And there is a group of players out there who would prefer to see Harry Marino come in. And this is a former union lawyer who was instrumental in helping with the minor league unionization. So you've got a pocket of young players who are more ideologically aligned with Marino. So there's a bunch of different things going on.
Yeah, it's interesting. And honestly, I'm trying to make all of that make sense at the same time in my head.
It's tough because the folks inside the union are having tough difficulty with that.
And yeah, what's this Boras piece? Like, so there's the idea that Meyer is aligned with Scott Boras, who, you know, is known for these big gaudy deals, which this free agent year, he's kind of 0 for 3 on getting these mega contracts. Looks like he's going to be 0 for 4 with Jordan Montgomery, I guess 0 for 5 if we throw in JD Martinez. But yeah, he had 5 high-profile clients. None of them are getting the deals that they want. So is that part of it? Or yeah, make it all make sense.
Yeah, I think that's part of it as well. But again, you've got this sort of also – independent of what's going on right now with the union leadership, there's sort of an internal debate that if you sort of start with the premise that there's a finite number of dollars to go around to the pool of player talent writ large, that there's X number of dollars in the compensation universe, how you sort of allocate that to your prior point between younger players and older players and which side of arbitration and free agency and how you sort of allocate that and how risk is assessed, because part of the team side argument is we don't want to pay as much, for the younger player because so many of them don't pan out. But then the ones that do pan out, well, where's mine because I'm leading the team kind of thing. And so that debate is continued to rage on and has raged on for many years. But again, as we have more and more young players coming up and really dominating the game, that debate is sort of taken on a heightened situation. And then Boras sort of feeds into it because, again, he has a disproportionate amount of representation on players on the older scale. And the ones that are looking for those big free agent deals, he has a particularly outsized influence. And so it all just sort of factors in as to what is the best system to allocate that finite set of resources. And nobody either on the player side or the league side has a clear unilateral, on a undebated vision of that. That continues to be a thing every labor cycle.
Yeah, yeah. And I think teams are seeing, you know, the Orioles and Rays beating the Yankees and the Red Sox with, you know, a minimal payroll and saying, well, why don't we just do that too? And so, yeah, the big free agents, especially not the super, super stars, but, you know, your Blake Snells and Matt Chapmans of the world, who are saying, you know, the equivalent of me 5-10 years ago was getting $100-150 million. Now I'm settling for a relatively small deal. So yeah, they're not happy, but yeah, it's you might have to raise the floor on the younger players before those older players can.
That's an idea
on the same level.
That's been out there for a while. But again, this TV thing also factors into the mess as well, that you've got a bunch of teams out there that have been reluctant. I mean, the Dodgers are obviously in their own category, and they've got their local TV situation locked down for some years. But there are a number of teams out there who just don't know where that 2025, 2026, 2027 money is coming from, or even what it's going to look like. And so that makes them all the more reluctant to make big multi-year deals on expensive talent.
Yeah, absolutely. Eric Fisher, thanks for sorting through this giant mess and for joining us on the show. Shohei Ohtani is an international icon, and now that icon has a logo. The superstar, who is in South Korea preparing for his first regular season game as a Los Angeles Dodger, unveiled his personal logo along with New Balance, the company he has a long-term relationship with. Ohtani is known for his ability to hit and pitch at the very highest level, but he's doing neither of those things in the logo. He is running and his body is at an angle as if he was rounding a base, and that just so happens to put him at the same angle of the N and B in the New Balance logo, which appears in the corner of the Shohei logo. The image unveiling includes limited edition shirts, a celebration at a New Balance store in Los Angeles, and a new ad spot that is basically just Ohtani hitting baseballs for 15 seconds. The campaign is a further sign that Ohtani has reached beyond any other MLB star, and that New Balance is going to try and associate themselves with him the way Nike did with Michael Jordan. NIL platform Open Doors and advertising and marketing company Epsilon are teaming up for a unique NIL offer. Every woman playing in March Madness can opt into a $500 deal to promote Epsilon's brand. The two companies are leaning into this moment in which the most hyped player maybe in any sport right now is Caitlin Clark. There is a ton of excitement around the women's teams at South Carolina, LSU, and UConn. This is a moment when millions of people are tuning into women's college basketball. ESPN is drawing its biggest audience for women's hoops in 15 years. The hype itself is a feel-good story, and so brands are looking to get into the shot. As an NIL platform that already works extensively in this space, Open Doors is positioned to do something different than a 30-second ad spot, and Epsilon is leveraging this moment and its relationship with Open Doors to make that happen. We'll be chatting with Open Doors CEO Blake Lawrence about this deal and the NIL space generally in a coming episode, so make sure you and the college sports fans in your life are subscribed to the show. Up next, Giannis has a media production company called Improbable Media, and even in its early stages, we can already see that this is going to be unlike other athlete-led production companies. I spoke to John Stern, the CEO of Improbable, on what to expect and why more and more sports media is athlete-driven. That conversation is coming up next. Very excited to be joined now by Jonathan Stern, CEO of Improbable Media. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Owen. It's such a pleasure. Really appreciate the time.
Yeah, great to have you on. So Improbable Media is the production company founded by Giannis Antetokounmpo and Jay Williams. What's the vision behind this company?
From my perspective, the sort of influence or inspiration for the company is really this unique moment in time that we have in terms of celebrities in general, but more particular athletes, to really drive cultural conversations and to guide impact and drive impact at the same time in a way that is really unique and really special. And if you take someone like Giannis, for example, who grew up in like great poverty, he overcame incredible obstacles. He moved from another country as a product of the immigrant experience. Really, the company is called Improbable because the life that he leads today is so improbable. And we really want to be a source of inspiration for people in terms of making the improbable probable in their lives. And part of what that does for the athlete is not only being able to have a media company that's an expression of their own values and the things that they care about, which I hope we'll talk about in a little bit, but also allows them to control their narrative a little bit more. And sort of the business aspect of this is it also allows them to capture more revenue in terms of the exploitation and monetization of their celebrity and their influence. So by way of example, Giannis is going to do a television commercial no matter what. He's going to do social media no matter what. He's going to work with brands no matter what. By having his own production company, he has an opportunity to capture more of that revenue rather than having some third-party company doing those productions, servicing those projects. And at the same time, just as, and we'll talk about this as well, the recent documentary that we co-produced with Words and Pictures called Giannis, The Marvelous Journey for Amazon. Once again, that was an opportunity for him, you know, to capture more of that revenue within his ecosystem while driving and having more control over his personal narrative.
Yeah. And you mentioned this is kind of a boom time for, you know, celebrities and athletes to have their own production companies. I've been at FOS 3 years, and I feel like when I started, if you reached a certain status, you had a venture firm. And now it's like, if you reach that status, you have a production company, and, you know, maybe you have both. But yeah, it is interesting. And I feel like partly it's that they can, and that this road has been paved. You know, we've seen Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and a bunch of others do this. And I think athletes see that it's possible. And yeah, they see that they can tell their own stories. And also, like you said, capture more of that revenue that they're going to get from doing media anyway. How do you think that's going to shape the media consumption for people, you know, for this next generation?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that if you think about how we engage with media in general today, we increasingly live in an age of a soundbite. We're increasingly living by this thing that's in our hands all the time and spending more hours, younger generations on TikTok and Instagram than they are watching traditional television. And when you look at sort of from an historical perspective, there was a lot of friction between athlete controlling their narrative and the way that narrative was actually told, because we had big sort of guardrails or big walls that had to be climbed to be able to tell your stories. We're now in a place where there's much more direct communication between athlete and their audience. And that grows and that develops over time. And when you look at the ability of athletes to speak instantly to their audiences, social media is by definition social. So it's a conversation. And what that does over time is through that conversation, we learn from our audiences what resonates about each other, what makes us curious about each other. And so when you think about what that means to longer form content, when you talk about traditional television or a Netflix or an Amazon, by the time that we've really crafted the kinds of stories that we want to tell, we already know what audiences want to hear from us. And sort of the beauty of the storytelling that we can do today, which may be a little bit different than in the past, is not only is it someone else telling the story about us the way they want to tell it, but we already have an intelligence that we've gathered in terms of the kinds of conversations that resonate with the athlete or with talent in general, but also will resonate with other audiences. And so it creates a different way in which we can create programming that we know is just going to land much more strongly than, say, 10, even, you know, 15 years ago, when we didn't have that immediate kind of feedback in the relationship, the almost one-to-one relationship between celebrity and consumer.
And where are you seeing that hunger from the audience about what kind of content they want to see right now?
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple different pieces. One is, which we've seen a lot of, and I'll also tell you before I even fully answer this question, tastes changed over time. But when we sit here today, you know, what are the things that we see really drives a lot of audience interest? First, it's those important personal profiles. So Giannis, The Marvelous Journey, which we just recently released, which is really something of an origin story of Giannis and his background, but also the importance of family to him personally, to his success in life, and who he really fundamentally identifies as a person. I think audiences having an opportunity to really take a peek and to sort of a look behind the veil and really understanding what makes celebrity and what makes athletes tick has really strong resonance. Separately, we recently did another project called Ugo, a homecoming story, which we helped produce with WhatsApp, which was the story of Giannis's very first journey to Nigeria. So I think there's an absolute audience hunger and really understanding celebrity in a much more human way, as opposed to the way that we've sort of venerated them in the past and looked at them as sort of icons and idols. I think we look at them as how do we relate to them on a more personal level? I think we see that in a lot of the documentaries, whether it's been about Beckham or Neymar or others. I think the other interesting piece that we find that there's been a lot of audience interest is that behind the scenes of how team works, how does the striving work? So we've seen Drive to Survive, which has put Formula One, it's always been a global sport, but now front and center of US audiences. Full Swing, which Netflix also has on golf. This sort of behind the scenes peek of what drives us, what the challenges are. There's something very universal to those stories and very relatable. And I think we're starting to see that more and more within what is resonating with audiences in the sports space. And I think I will also add, one of the stories that we're bringing to market right now is the story of an NFL football player named F.A. Obada, who plays for the Washington Commanders. And F.A. Was born in Nigeria, but was ultimately trafficked as a child into the U.K. And this is a story F.A. has never told before. It's one of resilience, it's an underdog story of which we very much champion the underdog. But also, to where we get earlier, there's, I think, something like 21 million people in the world that have been trafficked living today. And we don't really talk about that. And so I think there's another place where there are really important conversations that we need to be having in society. And athletes have the pulpit and the opportunity to sort of open our eyes and really lead to those conversations. And as we speak to our audiences and communicate to our audiences, we see that there's an openness to taking to heart and thinking more deeply about issues that are really affecting society.
Another of your projects that caught my eye, you guys are working on a heist movie, sort of Ocean's 11 style, set in Greece. I think that's about all that's being publicly spoken about that. But that is a different angle than we usually get from these, from athlete production companies. You would kind of expect maybe a documentary or a docuseries about the signature athlete. Heist movie, not so much.
I'm so glad you asked that question. So here's what's special about getting to work with Giannis. On day one, we are a global company. He's venerated across, he has heritage across three different continents. Let me the United States, obviously born and raised in Greece. As you know, we all call him the Greek freak, but also very close to his Nigerian heritage. And so when I look at the opportunities for us as a media company, I really think of what are the things that we can do overseas, because he has audiences that may be even bigger than certain territories in the United States. Secondarily, when I think about Giannis as a brand, we talk about resilience, and we haven't talked about yet, but that post-game interview is where he talks about how there's no failure in sports and everything in steps of success, and that is a family man. But he is also a comedian, and he's a dad jokes guy. And when you think about the breadth of what drives Giannis and who he is as a person, there's a lot of breadth. There's a lot of power to how he's a very, very complete person. So how does that lead to the scripted project that we're working on? It's a comedy action heist. It takes place in Greece, of which he has a familial and personal association with. And it really shines a light on the other aspects of his personality, which you don't always get to see, but it's fantastically entertaining. And I'll also say, related to that, we're in the process of out pitching with Mission Control, a cooking competition show. And if you look up some of the most watched videos of Giannis, it's his first smoothie in America, his first corn dog, his first bratwurst, and also he's invested in Candy Funhouse, which is the largest seller of candy in North America. And meanwhile, loves his Greek food, loves his Nigerian food. So when you think about the different playgrounds that we play in, it's because those are the things that he cares about and that he's passionate about. So I think that's why you're starting to see that within the slate and the kinds of stories that we're bringing to the marketplace.
Yeah. And is he going to be in either the heist movie or the cooking show?
You'll have to wait and see.
All right. Fair enough. And also, I just wanted to kind of step back a little bit, get the sort of making of the production company itself. I mean, at this point, it feels like if you're famous enough, you can just snap your fingers and you have a production company. But what actually goes into, beyond snapping your fingers, to setting something like this up?
I appreciate that. And listen, to begin with, as everyone knows, every overnight success was years in the making. And everything that seems simple involves actually a lot of thought and a lot of strategy and a lot of thinking. And the origin story of sorts it involves, in some measure, Jay Williams, you know, our partner and co-founder who you referenced earlier, who also has an improbable story, by the way. You have someone who's a National Collegiate Player of the Year, you know, very close with Coach K, number two draft pick after Yao Ming, and was unfortunately in a very catastrophic motorcycle accident following his rookie year, and rebuilds his life. He's also made the improbable probable in his own life as well. He was also counted out, never expected to bounce back the way that he did. And both Giannis and Jay have a real appreciation for the importance of athletes building careers and building businesses off of the field of play. Jay's personal story and narrative is you never know what tomorrow may bring. And Giannis's story, the poverty they grew up in, and looking at other athletes who have catastrophic injuries, there's a real importance of diversification. Having said that, as Jay looked at the world and saw how he built his life, rebuilt his career, and Giannis looks at the world and realizes that, you know, he probably has another 8, 9, maybe 10 seasons playing in the NBA, there's a really beautiful combination and pairing of them coming together. Jay on the one part, and this is getting into the secret sauce of what we're doing, is increasingly sort of a godfather of sorts, increasingly the face of college basketball for ESPN. And he's seeing athletes and celebrity and talent coming up in the ranks and stepping onto the global stage. Giannis, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn. You know, his second act maybe as an assistant coach. He's a mentor to athletes all of the time. And when we look at the business, we have a Giannis who's going to be in the limelight, hopefully for a really, really long time. And then we also have this ecosystem of seeing athletes in the come up. And when we look at the strategy behind this company, which I said took a lot of thought and a lot of thinking and a lot of planning, is at the beginning, version 1.0, as I like to say, is getting Giannis right and making sure that we're getting his brand right and in filling his ecosystem appropriately. But version 2.0 is what we talk about as being the Motown for emerging talent. And I say talent because it may not only be athletes, it could be brands, it could be other forms of celebrity. And we're really building the toolbox for a very specific kind of talent who want to use storytelling and want to use their ability to be in the limelight to help build brands that are much bigger than what they do on the court and on the field of play. And that's what we're building and that's what we're constructing. And it really came from this insight of Giannis and Jay of how do we build an empire that can succeed even both of us? And that's the Motown of it all.
All right, very cool. Jonathan Stern, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Owen.
That's it for today. Subscribe and share this episode with a friend who you think would enjoy it. Thanks for listening. We will see you tomorrow.